Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up later this hour, the Deputy Speaker of the Israeli Knesset, Danny Danon, with his reaction to the violence in Libya and Egypt in reaction to a film that insulted Islam that was reportedly made by an Israeli-American. He'll also talk about his new book and Prime Minister Netanyahu's call to President Obama to draw a red line with respect to Iran, over which the U.S. would allow Israel to attack Iran with respect to its nuclear program or do it ourselves. And Danny Danon coming up in a few minutes. First, two studies were released this week on wasted money and our health. One asserts that screenings for ovarian cancer do more harm than good. The other details billions of dollars that are wasted generally within the healthcare system. My next guest wrote an article on the ovarian cancer screening findings for yesterday's New York Times. Denise Grady is a science reporter for the Times and has written over 700 articles on science and medicine for the paper. Denise, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So I see that a panel of medical experts called the United States Preventive Services Task Force added ovarian cancer screenings to a list of other screenings deemed unnecessary and potentially damaging, like PSA screenings for prostate cancer or mammograms for women under 50. How do doctors screen for ovarian cancer?
The test that is sometimes recommended, there are two tests that have been used. One of them is to look at blood for a thing called CA-125, which is this substance that will go up in the bloodstream when there's cancer. And if the level's too high, that can be a tip-off that maybe something's wrong. The problem with that test is that there are other things besides cancer that can make it can raise it. So if you find a high reading, it might be cancer, but it might not. The other test that they use is an ultrasound scan. And if the ovaries look too large or if a growth is seen, again, it could be cancer. But again, the problem is the test may see something that's not really cancer. You know, there are other reasons for the ovaries to be enlarged or you can have a cyst that's benign. But then once you see something like that, it's human nature to say, well, I want to get rid of this. Very few people have, you know, the kind of nerves of steel it would take to say, well, you know, let's come back later, let's watch and wait, let's ignore this. And so you wind up with lots of people having surgery that it turns out they didn't need. And the other piece of it is that even in the cases where people do have the cancer, if you look at women who get screened versus women who don't get screened, who have ovarian cancer, the test does not save lives. It doesn't cut the death rate from ovarian cancer. So on this one, you really have kind of a double whammy on it. Not only is it not going to save lives, but it can actually put you in harm's way by pushing you into surgery that you don't need. And the surgery has a fairly high complication rate in these studies. You know, 15% of the women who have had surgery have had what the doctors considered serious complications. And that could be things like a blood clot or bleeding or damage to some other organ during the surgery. So it's not just a matter of having a test that, you know, oh, maybe it will help you. You know, clearly this one has been found not to help and to do some harm.
There are exceptions, though, right?
Do you mean with screening in general?
Well, in this case, as I understand it, women who have a certain genetic mutation or a family history
right.
of ovarian cancer
yes, you're
should
right.
still be screened, they say?
Well, here's the message on that. It's also a complicated one. These findings, and this group, you're right, made a point of saying that this applies to healthy women and who don't have symptoms or a family history or a genetic makeup that would make them more prone to this kind of cancer. But what the doctors also say is that even with women who are at high risk, they don't really have evidence that this test saves lives. But with the women who are high risk, they go ahead and do it anyway. And sometimes they do it even more often than you would think about doing in somebody not at risk. And they're doing this, they admit, because they're kind of at a loss. There's just nothing else to do. The women who are at very high risk really are ultimately advised to have their ovaries removed as soon as possible when they are finished having their kids.
You reported, though, that a third of about 1,000 doctors surveyed still believe that the screening for ovarian cancer is effective and routinely offer it to patients. That seems like a lot of dissenters to make such a widespread assertion that this is a bad thing to do.
You know, it is human nature, I guess. We all want to think and have been taught that if we find cancer early or find signs of it early, we can prevent it or cure it. And doctors are not immune to that, I guess. What the doctors I talked to about this also said is that they get pressure from patients. Somebody has, even a friend or a neighbor who gets this disease, and it is an awful disease, and people want to think they can do something about it. They go in and want to be screened, and it's pretty hard for doctors to talk people out of this. So some of them just plain give into that. But these recommendations by this task force, they're not alone in saying this. The College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists agrees, the American Cancer Society agrees that this is not a screening test that healthy women need.
Listeners, any questions for our guest, New York Times health reporter Denise Grady, on the recommendation by this task force called the United States Preventive Services Task Force to not get routine ovarian cancer screenings if you are a healthy woman not deemed at special risk of the disease? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we'll get into the other related story this week about so much money being wasted generally on unnecessary medical treatment. But 212-433-WNYC, if you want to get in on this. I guess an important distinction to make is that this panel wasn't saying that we don't need to screen for ovarian cancer. It said that the current screening method we have is ineffective, but in the meantime, this is the best we have. Is that an important distinction?
The ideal that everybody says is we need something else. And if there could just be a way to find this disease at an early stage, it would be great, because most women who get this kind of cancer have it at a late stage by the time it's found. You just don't know you've got it until it's fairly far along. So it would be ideal if they could come up with some other test that was more reliable and didn't lead so many people into surgery. But right now, the task force members and people who've done studies on it really are saying don't do it. I mean, they're not even saying it's the best test we've got. You know, they're just saying it ought not to be done because you have such a reasonably high chance of being led into surgery by it.
Marilyn in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi, Brian. Congratulations on all your good hard work.
Thank you.
I just want to make a comment on the arithmetic of Bill Clinton. 3,000 odd women out of 78 odd thousand women who have had false positives is not 10%. It's only 4%. And that seems like a major, major difference and important for women to consider. So I'll take everything else off the air.
Thank you. And I guess the Bill Clinton reference is that he talked about arithmetic in his speech at the Democratic Convention and then brought it up yesterday with respect to Medicare, unrelated to this. But an ovarian cancer diagnosis is basically a death sentence, Denise. So I guess the argument that she's referencing here is that even if only 1 in 20 women who have surgery after a positive test end up actually having cancer, couldn't it be important that the test could save at least one woman's life?
See, The thing was that even though you found that cancer, if you look at the women who were not screened, because there was no difference in the death rate. They just could not find it. They looked hard and could not find it.
Does that mean that the surgery, even where there is a cancer, is ineffective?
It doesn't. It means that finding the cancer with the test at this point doesn't make a difference in the death rates. And it doesn't mean that you should not treat it or not bother. I mean, the earlier that you find it, you may make your surgery somewhat easier. Can I come back to her arithmetic question?
Sure.
She was mentioning that it was 3,000 people out of 78,000, but actually you have to divide that 78,000 in half. Because half of the people in the study got screened and half of them didn't. And in the ones who got screened, it was the 3,000 who went ahead and had false positives. So it actually was a 10% false positive rate.
I guess another place, I get it. So I guess another place that Medicare comes into this is, you know, the whole death panel fear. People are afraid that a panel of doctors is going to make decisions based on statistics and costs that are literally life and death decisions for certain patients. And so now, well, maybe they'll decide that Medicare won't reimburse ovarian cancer screenings anymore.
People do get up in arms when they think that something is being taken away from them. It's absolutely true. What this group is saying, this panel makes a point of saying that they don't make their decisions with cost in mind at all. They don't look at costs. Their mission is to just look at benefit and risk. So I think they would say they're not taking away something that does anybody any good. They're suggesting giving up on something that not only doesn't do any good, but is hurting people.
Louise in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Louise.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
Quick question, Brian. I would like to know from your guest if a transvaginal ultrasound is the same as the test she's referring to. And is there some great risk involved in having that done routinely?
Do you know, Denise?
The answer is yes. The transvaginal is the thing that was done in the study. The risk to having it, I mean, the test itself doesn't hurt you or do any harm or injury. The problem with it is that it can show something that will look suspicious. And once you see that, you really are in a dilemma because once you see something suspicious on this test, the only way really to find out what you're looking at is to go in and take out the ovary. This is not the kind of thing where you can put in a needle and take a little biopsy. The only way to test for an ovarian problem once you see something like this is to take it out. And with this high false positive rate, you just run a risk of winding up having this done unnecessarily. So then not only do you have unnecessary surgery, but you do run a risk of having these complications that go along with the surgery. So the test itself, again, doesn't hurt you, but what the test leads to, it can put you at the top of the slippery slope. And for anybody who has had any kind of screening test and had a false positive on it, you will know that once this happens, it is very, very hard not to follow up. And it's also very hard, even when the whole thing is resolved, to get your peace of mind back.
Victoria in Westport, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I'm just calling because I think it's really important for women to have the CA-125, and I totally disagree with the whole study. My cousin was involved in a study that she volunteered for in Ohio, and it was done in Cleveland. And the objective of the study was to determine if, in fact, the CA-125 was important in early detection of ovarian cancer. She actually had an elevation in her CA-25 over a six-month period, and they took her in, and she was diagnosed with stage 2 ovarian cancer. And they, she went into surgery, they removed it, and she is a 6-year survivor. And they said to her that she was the poster child for verification that test should be done on women.
Thank you, Victoria. Denise, a quick response. We're going to run out of time soon.
I think it's a great point for the idea that maybe there will be a way to use this test better than the way that it has been used now. Maybe repeated tests like this, and there are studies going on, to figure out if there is a better way to use it and follow it.
And before you go, on the same day as your article, the Times ran an editorial called Waste in the Healthcare System. That article talked about a report from the Institute of Medicine estimating that 30% of healthcare spending in 2009, or $750 billion, was wasted on unnecessary or poorly delivered services and other needless costs. What are some of the biggest areas of waste if you followed this?
Some of them were tests that were repeated because they couldn't be transferred from one institution to another, or people who were having tests that they did not need. And so there were just things that were systems problems of inefficiencies. There were other things there was some fraud that wasn't the biggest one, but there were just a whole lot of kind of inefficiencies with systems. It sounds as if at least some of it is that there is so much information and so much knowledge and so many tests and treatments available now that we haven't gotten our minds and our arms around how to deal with all of it in an efficient way.
Which brings us back to the healthcare costs and the exploding costs of Medicare and private health insurance and some of the issues in the presidential race. And on we go as we continue to discuss these healthcare cost topics, as well as the effectiveness of healthcare in our country on many, many occasions on this show. Denise Grady, health correspondent for The New York Times, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, more on the Middle East and the presidential race with a member of the Israeli Knesset, Danny Danon. Stay with us.